O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You understand my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and are intimately acquainted with all my ways. Even before there is a word on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all. You've enclosed me behind and before and laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is too high. I cannot understand it. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. And if I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest part of the sea, even there your hand will lead me, and your right hand will lay hold of me. If I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me, and the light around me will be night, even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is as bright as the day. Darkness and light are alike to you. For you formed my inward parts. You wove me in my mother's womb, and I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were written all the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them. Father God, you know the individual burdens that each of us carries today. Hear us as we lay them at your feet. But our corporate prayer today is simple. We don't know where Devin is, but you do. There is nowhere he can be that's beyond your reach. Please protect him and return him to us. And we don't understand what or why this is happening. So strengthen our faith in you. How precious are your thoughts toward me, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I should count them, they would outnumber the sand. And when I awake, I am still with you. Amen.
Our scripture reading is from Isaiah 61, a passage Jesus chose for his first recorded sermon in the Gospel of Luke. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me, because the Lord has appointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to comfort the brokenhearted, to announce that captives will be released and prisoners will be freed. He has sent me to tell those who mourn that the time of the Lord's favor has come, and with it, the day of God's anger against their enemies. To all who mourn in Israel, he will give beauty for ashes, joy instead of mourning, praise instead of despair, for the Lord has planted them like strong and graceful oaks for his own glory. We're delighted to have Nicole Bromley with us this morning. She was here about 4 years ago or 3 years ago. She's an international speaker and author. She's the founder and director of One Voice Enterprises and speaks nationally and at points internationally on the issue of sexual abuse and trafficking. About a year ago, she began a campaign across Africa to stamp out child sexual abuse and human trafficking. And as I said, we're delighted to have her here today. Please welcome Nicole Brownlee.
Morning. I'm having an awful time with this thing. Sorry. Go Steelers while I'm getting this ready, maybe? I don't know. Don't tell my husband, he's a huge Patriots fan, and he's like in mourning, and I'm not kidding. Like, I think he cried a little bit. Oops, I think this is on. Well, I'm so grateful to be here with you today. I'm not sure where you all are from, you know, whether you come from a big city or a small town. If you're anything like me, you came from a really, really small town. The place I'm from, just next door in Ohio, we had one street light, we had one store, and we had more cows than we had people. I don't know if you've ever been to a place like this. I've been through Pennsylvania, and I know you know what I'm talking about. I don't know your family's background, whether you're an only child, maybe you come from a big family, come from a two-parent home, a single-parent home, maybe you never knew your parents at all. I don't know your values, your dreams, or your fears. You know, we could be the two most different people in the world, but the issue that I'm presenting today spans all borders, undermines all relationships, and speaks in the universal language of human emotion. So as I share this story with you this morning, I think you'll discover that we aren't so different after all. I want to begin by having you imagine with me a 12-year-old girl with long brown hair, hazel eyes, and a big heart encircling the name Zach Morris on her left hand. Three people have seen Saved by the Bell. Okay, cool. Awesome. Every day, this little girl would run up her gravel driveway to her house, throw her lunchbox on the table, and go to the freezer to get a big bowl of ice cream filled to the brim with chocolate syrup. And she would go to her bedroom and sit in the hot pink beanbag that was placed on the red carpet in her bedroom. The walls in her room were painted pink, and they were covered in posters of ballerinas, basketball players, and the New Kids on the Block. Every day, she would diligently go to her desk, finish her homework, and then she was off to practice for one of the three sports that she played. On the weekends, she would attend her local church youth group meeting, and then she would go to her cousin's house to play Nintendo. So even as she grew up, she continued to involve herself in her activities, continued to spend time with her friends. In many ways, she was like the poster child of her small community, a straight-A student, captain of three varsity sports, homecoming queen, student council president. She lived the perfect life. And at home, things seemed just as perfect. She lived with her mom and her stepdad. Her mom worked from home. They were very close. Her stepfather was self-employed, so they spent a lot of time doing father-daughter activities. She also had a stepsister who was exactly 5 months and 5 days younger than her, and they were best friends. So it was a very caring, supportive family for this little girl. Perfect family, a perfect girl, a perfect life. Now I want you to imagine with me for just a moment that same girl wishing that she were someone else. Imagine her planning how to run away from home. Imagine her planning her own funeral. This same girl who had the perfect life, perfect family, and the perfect neighborhood, who was not afraid of strangers, not afraid of spiders, was afraid to come home each and every day. She often had horrible nightmares. She often woke up crying. Why the nightmares? You know, why the crying? She cried because she was miserable, and she was miserable because she had a secret. Okay, I was miserable. I was the girl who walked into school every day with the biggest smile on her face, but I was also the same girl who was afraid inside. I had a secret. But I wasn't sure why I had to keep it. I do know that I will never forget the summer of 1994, I was 14 years old, looking forward to my freshman year of high school. Now, I already told you that we lived way out in the country and we had lots of cows. Well, we had to feed these cows, okay? So where I came from, everyone owned lots of land and land and land. And when I was little, okay, you're going to think I'm a huge hillbilly right now, but that's okay. Okay, my stepdad bought this huge honking mama tractor, okay? And literally, as an 8-year-old kid, I was taught how to drive this thing, and I had to do the mowing every single weekend. So I remember it was really nice outside one summer day. I had to go do my weekend chore of doing all this mowing on my huge honking mama tractor. So I hopped up on the thing, and I remember I wanted to tan myself while I mowed, so I put on my bathing suit. I was out there out maybe, I don't know, 15 minutes or so, when I saw my stepdad coming toward me with a glass of lemonade. So I stopped my tractor, and I waited for him to reach me. And I remember that I drank the entire glass, and I thanked him, and I noticed that he was kind of staring at my chest. I remember I felt really uncomfortable. I gave him the glass back right away. Then he made a dirty comment that was totally off the wall and disgusting, and I remember I got really angry, and so I just took off, and I continued mowing our field. And about an hour later, he came back out and offered me another drink, and I didn't stop this time. I just waved him back to the house. I said I didn't want anything, and then a few minutes later, I looked up, and I saw that he was standing on our front porch, staring at me with binoculars. And I remember that I got really angry and upset, and I started driving where there were trees so that he couldn't see me. But he didn't put them down. He kept following me with them wherever I was driving. I remember crying and thinking to myself that I wanted to end my life right then and there. You know, I didn't want to deal with this harassment anymore. It wasn't the first time that something like this had happened. And so I put the tractor into the highest gear, and I decided I was going to drive head-on into this huge tree at the very end of our field that was overlooking this cliff. And I remember as I got closer and closer to this big tree, almost fantasizing about not seeing my stepdad again. Then at the last second, I thought of my mom and how much it would hurt her. So I swerved, and obviously, my life didn't end that day. But neither did the torment. It was supposed to be one of the happiest summers of my life. We were going on this dream vacation to the Bahamas, and it was my mom, my stepdad, my stepsister, and I. And I remember that my stepdad had been acting very bizarre the entire trip. Even my mom noticed it. One day, it was just he and I swimming in the ocean, and as I came back to the beach where my mom was laying, she kept asking what was wrong. But as always, I told her I would just tell her later. That night, I remember brushing my teeth in our hotel room, and my stepfather came out of the bathroom. I'm not sure what you guys call them around here. I've been to a lot of places. In Texas, they said skivvies. In Tennessee, they said draws. Where I'm from, Ohio, they say tidy whities. I don't know. Actually, my very first year of speaking, there was a kid sitting in the front row of a chapel, and he yelled out, literally yelled out, "Cookie covers!" And I was like, okay, right? So I appreciate how quiet y'all are today, because you never know what someone might say. But anyways, quite original. That was all he was wearing, which was disgusting to begin with. What was totally wrong was the way that he touched me that night. And I know that for some of you, these two incidents in and of themselves might seem like minor situations in the life of a normal family. But for me, they were a turning point in my life, marking a beginning and an end. So how did these events bring an end to my journey? Well, it was about a week or so after returning home from our family vacation. My mom and I were in the car going to pick up my stepsister and bring her home with us for the weekend. Our conversation started off as it normally did, about each other's day. Mom brought up some current events. All of a sudden, it was silent. Traffic light turned red. Car stopped. As I sat there waiting for the light to turn green, I kept imagining what it would be like to tell my mom about the things that my stepfather had been saying and doing to me for so many years. My mom was the first to break the silence. She told me about her desire to go back to college, and she had talked with my stepdad about this, and he had become very angry about it and violent, acting in ways he never had before. Then she turned and she asked me, "Has he done anything strange around you?" Well, I was unsure as to whether or not it was really wrong. No one ever talked about it. Maybe it was even my fault. But I knew that if I were ever going to tell my mom, that this was the time. Remember, the traffic light turned green. My mom hit the accelerator. We were late. It was warm outside. I started sweating. My stomach was tied up in knots. And all of a sudden, I told her. She slammed on the brakes and pulled the car over to the side of the road. And for the first time in my life, I knew it was wrong. Then she asked me if he had ever touched me. That question brought with it all these memories I hadn't even thought about for years. Did he ever touch me? That question brought with it a memory of our summer vacation just 2 years earlier, before I entered junior high. Another scene on the beach, another scene on the water, just like the summer of 94, another family vacation I wanted to forget. A memory of him grabbing me, holding me in the water while he touched me under my bathing suit. I remember his words, "Do you want to go up to the hotel room?" I said, "No, I want to swim." He said, "We don't have to tell anyone, just come on." I said, "No, I want to go lay in the sand." He said, "We'll keep it our little secret." I pulled away from him. He was angry. He punished me by not speaking to me for the rest of the day. Did he ever touch me? These memories kept flashing back in my mind. The same vacation, the same night. He told me he needed to get some things out of our van. He needed my help. I went with him. I had no idea what was in store for me. He told me to hop in the back seat and look for the cooler. He hopped in the back seat too. He said, "Sit up straight and don't move around." Then it happened again. I remember feeling very scared. But he always told me that it was very special. He told me that night that if I loved him, I would let him. Did he ever touch me? Well, I may not have known the answer when she first asked the question in the car that day, but as I saw my mom's reaction to everything I'd been telling her, the answer was obvious. Now, I was a victim of childhood sexual abuse, and I know that sexual abuse, rape, sex trafficking, these all still seem like an obscure crime, probably to so many of you. But that's because they're so often kept a secret. You know, the fact is that over 1 million children under the age of 18 are currently being sexually abused by a family member in the United States. There is an estimated 39 million survivors of sexual abuse living in America today. Over 100,000 U.S. children are forced into prostitution and pornography in America every year. And every minute, 2 children are sold into sex slavery. These numbers are real. You know, maybe some of you are thinking this doesn't apply to you. You picture this happening to only poor city girls living in immoral families with bad parents and no friends. You're right. But it also happens in every other type of home, every other type of family. Sexual abuse cuts across all boundaries, male, female, Christian, non-Christian, black, white, rich, poor. 1 in every 3 girls, 1 in every 6 boys will be sexually abused by the time they turn 18. Those kids have names. You know, those kids have faces. Look at me, I'm a statistic. I hate statistics. I'm here today because I was that 1 in 3 girls. I'm here today because of my little secret. Well, did he ever touch me? My mom got really quiet. She was holding back the tears, and we were now pulling in the driveway to pick up my stepsister, who was already outside waiting for us. So my mom quickly said that she didn't know what we were going to do, but not to worry. She would take care of it. That was Friday night. We left the following Monday. I remember crying and praying together with my mom that however things turned out, it would be the best for everyone that was involved. And just trusting the Lord with our lives. The days that followed were the most frightening days of my life. I knew that if my stepfather found us, he was going to kill us. The phone rang off the hook everywhere we tried to hide. My mom reported the abuse to Children's Services. The next morning, we were interviewed, and they told us that he had denied everything. Probably the most frightening day of my life occurred on the Thursday of that week. I remember it was so nice outside, and I was tired of being cooped up in all these attics and basements of our friends' and family's houses, hiding from my stepfather while the court system did what they needed to do. And on this day in particular, we were staying at my grandmother's house, and I asked my mom if we could go for a quick walk around the block because I just wanted to be outside. And so she agreed that we could do that. So my mom, my grandmother, and I were walking down the street. And as we were walking, I looked up and I saw my stepdad's big blue van driving towards us on the street. And I yelled at my mom and grandma to run because it was him. which my grandmother running. Oh my goodness, hilarious. Like, seriously, like, if I think about it, like, very closely resembles some kind of a dead chicken kind of thing. And I know some of you might have seen that because you live out in weird places. I don't know. But anyways, that's what my grandma looked like. Okay, back to the story. Where were we? So we were running, and we run literally around the corner to this library. And, I mean, there's no question in my mind that God was protecting us because somehow my stepfather did not see us. The next Tuesday, we went to stay with some friends, and their father took his kids and I to a store. And as we returned to the home, I saw a police car leaving the driveway. And as we were getting close, I thought we were going to pull in. He continued on past our house and dropped all of us off at their grandparents. So I stayed for a while, but I ended up walking back by myself to see what my mom was doing and why the police had been there. I knew something was wrong as soon as I walked in the door. I remember seeing my mom. She was sitting at the dining room table. She was very quiet, just looking down at her hands. And I said, "What's wrong, Mom? You know, why were the police here?" She said, "He shot himself." I said, "He's dead." She said, "Yes." I remember running around the house screaming, "I hate him, I hate him, I hate him." You know, I was so furious that he would never face justice here on earth. He would never have to face what he had done to me. I felt he had taken the easy way out. And though I know that was a really hard time in my life, and even though I would no longer experience sexual abuse, I felt like in that moment I was left alone. I felt dirty, damaged. I felt like everything was my fault. And I was afraid of what people would think about me if they knew the truth. So that day, I decided I was never going to tell my secret again. At the same time, my mom really became like a hero to me. She, you know, her faith that God would protect us was an incredible example. I remember clinging with my mom to Romans 8:28. We know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him. And in Jeremiah, "For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." That scripture became my favorite verse at the time. It was true. It was the end of my journey. You know, I was set free from this life of abuse, but it was also the beginning of my journey. I became a high school freshman. My mom became a college freshman. Things began to look better, but it was still an uphill battle. You know, I was separated from my stepsister. I've seen her only 3 times since I was 14 years old. Kids at school started calling me daddy's girl. The flashbacks, the nightmares, and to this day, I still can't remember when or how it all started. But I do remember when I was in 5th grade, there was a lady from the sheriff's department that came to our school and showed us a video about childhood sexual abuse. And I remember sitting on the library floor with all of my little 5th grade friends and my boyfriend, Chucky. And I remember thinking to myself, this really seems a lot like what's happening to me. But I wasn't sure. You know, how could all these things be happening and no one see it or suspect it? You know, I think people, I've been speaking for a long time about this issue, and I realize that sometimes people place part of the blame on the victim for allowing abuse, rape, or an unhealthy dating relationship to continue over this long stretch of time. But what they don't realize is that an abuser seeks control and knows exactly how to silence you. You know, an abuser will convince the victim that it's their fault. Do you remember the pink bedroom with the red carpet? Well, it was right across the hallway from the bathroom in our house. So after a shower, I would wrap up in a towel, run 3 feet across the hallway, be in my bedroom closet, drying off, looking for something to wear. I'd turn around and my stepdad's in my room staring at me. I would get so angry. I'd be like, "What are you doing in my room? Get out of here." And he would say that I had somehow asked him to come in because the door was not latched properly, because it wasn't locked, because I ran across the hall wearing a towel. This was somehow a sign that I wanted to come in. And I know that sounds crazy to so many of you, but hearing something like this as a 10-year-old, 6-year-old girl, time after time after time after time, by her stepfather who she loves and trusts, and no one's talking about sexual abuse, began to believe that he was right. You know, I thought that somehow I deserved it, had somehow asked for this. Of course, the reality is that a child cannot stop abuse from occurring, cannot ask for abuse. 90% of victims know their abuser. 75% are related to the child they abuse. You know, my stepfather said that he wanted us to be really close. He said he wanted it to be our little secret. He told me it was his responsibility to teach me things about my body and that all good dads do this for their special daughters. I knew he loved me and would never mean to hurt me. After all, he wanted to be closer to me than my real dad was. He said, all little girls want this. No one ever talks about it. He said it was normal. I loved and trusted him. I had no reason not to. An abuser also will give a victim no choice. You know, even when I had questions about what was going on and felt horrible inside, he told me he would kill my dog if I ever told anyone. He said my mom would get really jealous if she knew what was happening. I would never see her again. She would hate me. I would have to live with another family. He said no one would ever believe me because I was just a little girl. And he was a very popular man in our town. He made me believe I had no choice. And he made me believe I had no voice. And he made me believe there was no way out. But I'm here today at Little Geneva College because I want you to know that there is a way out. You know, after an entire childhood of horrible experiences like the ones that I've shared with you today, I can honestly tell you that at 30 years old, I know that I look 15, but at 30, I have found freedom and healing by the grace of God. You know, I'm a work in progress, but I do know that God can bring good out of these kinds of situations. And I'll share a lot more tonight, but as I know, time's cutting short. But I will tell you that there was one question I asked a lot when I was little. Where was God? Why didn't you stop it? When I was 15 years old, a year later, I had not told my secret to anyone. I went to a Christian camp in Cleveland, Ohio, and I told my story for the first time in front of about 300 of my friends from school, youth group, and such. And when I returned home, you know, when you go to camp, you make all these new friends and, like, you become pen pals. Well, today you guys are like, here's my Twitter, Facebook, MySpace, blah, 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 page. Back then, you had to actually write down your address and put things in an envelope and a stamp 3 days before someone got a message. Really weird, I know. But that's what we did. So anyways, I got home and I started receiving letters and letters and letters from other kids at camp telling me their story for the first time. For so many years, I thought I was alone, like no one else had been through this. I want you to know today, if you've been through something like I've mentioned today, you are not alone. Although I know that most of you have not been sexually abused, I do know that I am not alone in this room. And for those who may walk in my shoes, I ask you to help me break the silence surrounding sexual abuse, surrounding rape, surrounding trafficking. Remember, 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 6 boys are sexually abused by the time they turn 18. Never believe that sexual abuse or rape happens in some other town, some other community, some other campus, some other home, because I promise you, it happens everywhere. And I believe that God has called me here today simply as a broken vessel to help you break the silence and to carry this message to the next level. You know, someone in here may be a sexual perpetrator. Maybe it's you. If it is, I ask you to help in this process by seeking help, confessing this to someone on campus, getting help for your private thought life, your time on the computer, your relationships, and seek healing in your own life. And someone here has a secret. Maybe it's you. I invite you to share your secret with someone you trust and let this be the beginning of your healing journey like it was for me. And finally, before Dean Smith comes up, I want to acknowledge that some of you may have never had to face anything that I've mentioned here today, but chances are you have a friend who has, and I want to invite you to be an open ear to a friend who needs it, who will be willing to make a difference in someone else's life here, starting today. I know that some of the stories I told you about my past were hard to hear, but I want you to imagine how hard it might be for someone that you're close to have lived through. So the question I want you to think about as you go from here is, how many of you are willing to help me put an end to the secret that's surrounding sexual violence? And how many of you are willing to surrender your own past, no matter what that entails, in order for God to use it for good? I'm not asking for your sympathy. I'm asking for your strength. Thanks so much for listening. I hope to see you later today.